Good morning and happy Thursday. Praise Jesus, it's Thursday, right? One day closer to our spring break. How exciting is that? Okay, so we have a busy agenda, so I'm going to ask you all to move really quickly along with me. We're going to have, 3 minutes per present? We have five, but you know what? Just because you have 5 minutes doesn't mean you need to give elaborate speeches, okay, Representative Warwas? All right, so we're going to start off with House File 4156 for the City of Buell.
All right, thank you, Chair Franz and members. Thank you for breaking the ice for me this morning, Chair. And today I'm pleased to present House File 4156, and that's a $3.1 million request for the City of Buell citywide wastewater and infrastructure upgrades. It's an important project to modernize aging systems, reduce inflow and infiltration, and support future residential and commercial growth in that small Iron Range community. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mayor Jim Matthews to share more about the projects and impact.
And before we take the mayor's testimony, Representative Reimer, have you had a moment to take over a look at on Tuesday's minutes from Tuesday, March 24th?
Madam Chair, I have had an opportunity to review the minutes, and I move to approve them.
Okay, any comments, questions, concerns? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Great. Okay, minutes approved. And Mayor, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, co-chairs Franson and Lee and the members of the committee. I'm Jim Matthews. I'm the mayor of City of Buell. And also thank you for the opportunity to present the project that is very essential to our community's future. And thank you to Representative Warwas for introducing the House File 4156. By the way, I do want to mention that Buell is proud to have recently been recognized by the Minnesota Rural Waters Association as having the best tasting water in Minnesota for the second time in the last 3 years. Maintaining that quality and supporting growth requires continued investment in our core infrastructure. Our citywide wastewater and infrastructure upgrade project is focused on modernizing our wastewater and stormwater systems to meet today's needs and prepare for tomorrow. The project includes three key components. First, improvements to our business block infrastructure, which will open land along Highway 169 corridor for commercial development, and that's supporting economic growth and expanding our tax base. Secondly, the East End residential development, where we will create an infrastructure needed to address our housing shortage and support new residential growth. This area may also include a joint venture of government services with Great Scott Township. And thirdly, citywide stormwater upgrades, including streets and alleys. These improvements will enhance stormwater management, reduce inflow and infiltration, which is a problem for us, and to protect both our infrastructure and the environment. This project will support housing and business development, improve system efficiency, and strengthen our long-term financial sustainability as a community. And for a small city like Buell, projects of this scale are not possible without state partnership. Bonding support is critical to moving forward. In closing, this project is positioning Buell for responsible growth while delivering the quality services that our residents deserve. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I will do my best to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mayor. Members, do we have any questions for Representative Zerwas or for the Mayor of Buell? Chair Lee.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Mayor. Did you happen to bring any of your fine water down today?
I'm sorry, I'm getting a little too old to carry all cases of water.
All right. Any other further questions? Okay, seeing none, thank you for your time. Thanks for making your way down here, Mr. Matthews. All right, next up, Representative Warwas, House File 3835. You have an application of increased funding for water infrastructure grants for the, this is for the WIF program, correct?
Yes.
And would you like to proceed?
Yes, and Madam Chair, I do have an amendment which is requested by the Department of Health. Do you have that?
No amendment.
That's
3825.
We don't have it in my packet. Oh, maybe I'm on the wrong bill.
Hang on. Yeah, we got it.
Okay, we got it. Never mind. I'm the chair. Don't mind me. I don't know what's going on. Yeah, a lot of paperwork. Hold on. Okay. So, yes, we do have the A1 amendment, and would you like us to move the A1 amendment?
I would appreciate that.
Okay. So, any questions on the A1 amendment, members? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, fantastic. Amendment is adopted. Proceed.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members. Today I'm presenting House File 3835, a bill to clarify a legislative intent regarding the water infrastructure funding cap administered by the Minnesota Public Facilities Authority. And this legislation ensures that the cap increase enacted in 2025 functions as intended, and that helps close funding gaps for critical regional water infrastructure projects like Aurora East Range Water Project, which this committee probably remembers as the poster child for the WIF cap increase. And with that, I'd like to turn to my testifiers, Jeff Jacobson, Aurora City Administrator, and Dave Skelton, Treasurer of the East Range Water Board, and they can provide additional details.
Okay, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Jeff Jacobson, Aurora City Administrator. Madam Chair, committee members, thanks for the time this morning. Our request today is really quite simple, just that change in the language so that this increased WIF amount that was intended for the City of Aurora and for the East Range Water Project actually be applied to that project. This project has been very, very complex, a lot of moving parts, literally and figuratively, and we're down to the final stretch where we're trying to finalize this funding package. And this WIF funding package is wisely set up so that there's a grant program and a loan program, and that loan program takes you right up to your maximum affordability. We understand that a community receiving the funds should pay back those funds to the best of their ability, but this program is set up so that when you get to that affordability cap, a grant kicks in and actually buys that down for you. A combination of large project costs and a very low median household income in Aurora, or as one of the smallest median household incomes in the state, means that the maximum WIF grant, as it was previously stated, is not enough to buy it down to that affordability rate. If this language is approved, just the simple change in the language actually applies that increased cap to our project as was intended by the initial legislation, we would be able to bring it down to that affordability cap. If not, the project is in place, the project can't be held up. If this cap is not increased, the loan amount will actually put us at double that affordability rate. So we'd be twice as much as what has been determined that the citizens of Aurora can afford. So that's why our request is quite simple, just that change in language to reflect what the intent of the legislation was, so that this increased cap would apply to the City of Aurora and the East Range Water Board's project.
Okay. Members, any questions? Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe more for House Researcher, for Ms. Griffin or Andy Lee. So if we were to enact this language, how would this impact future bonding bill going forward, or is this just for these two projects that are being brought forth today?
All right. Okay, Chelsea? Ms. Griffin?
Chair Franson, members, let me just read the language again one more time. So I mean, the caps that were passed last session would, you know, apply to projects going forward. I don't think this changes, you know, anything else going forward. But I'll look into it a little bit more for you.
Is that suffice? Okay. Thank you. Any other further questions, members? Okay. Seeing none. Thank you for presenting today and making your way down to our beautiful Capitol.
Thank you.
All right, let's see what we got next.
We have Representative Schwartz. Please come on up. House File 4486. All right, for the Mankato Airport. She's not even on here. Oh, there it is. All right, please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Good morning, Chair Franson and Chair Lee and members. My name is Representative Erica Schwartz. Can you guys hear me? Sorry. Mm-hmm. Okay. Chair Franson and Chair Lee and members, thank you for the opportunity to present House File 4486. The Mankato Regional Airport. This is the second busiest airport in Minnesota with over 126 operations a year. This bill is about keeping up with the demand and making sure that we have the right safety and infrastructure in place. Currently, this airport is the Minnesota's busiest airport that operates without an air traffic control tower. The addition of the tower will dramatically enhance the safety and coordination to everyone in the community, and ultimately the state. The proposal of a $1.265 million investment will help leverage over $24 million in federal and local funding, making this a high-impact, cost-effective partnership. I would like to introduce my testifier, City Administrator Susan Arntz.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Good morning, committee members. My name is Susan Arntz, and I serve as the city manager for the City of Mankato. I appreciate the opportunity to address the Committee on Representative Schwartz's bill. As was indicated, this is the second busiest airport in Minnesota that does not operates without an air traffic control tower. We have 126,000 operations annually that are comprised of corporate and residential, recreational, but more importantly, we are home to Minnesota's second busiest university that has the only aeronautics program for our state. Minnesota State University Mankato produces more pilots out of our university, and it's an ever-growing program. It is the second busiest major at the university. This $1.265 million request will help us activate over $20 million of federal funding from the FAA. Our project is near ready to go. In the weeks in front of us, we will complete our plans and be at that 100% stage with FAA plan comments completed here this spring. And we are just waiting to get the funding for this airport assembled. This is really a public safety project, not a transportation project. It is critical to the region. One of the other benefits this airport has is it partners with the state of Minnesota on the Towards Zero Death program, and every time there is a major traffic accident in southern Minnesota, Mayo Clinic deploys Mayo One, which is their helicopter. There are, of course, times when that helicopter gets canceled because the incident doesn't necessitate that, but that partnership has been incredibly valuable to the residents of southern Minnesota. Thank you, and we request your consideration.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Representative Hansen, Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, it's really good that we get to hear these presentations today. If we had adjourned yesterday, we wouldn't be able to learn about these types of programs and all of these projects. Gosh, there's a lot of projects today that we wouldn't be hearing if we had adjourned yesterday. So I'm really glad that we didn't quit.
But just think, we could be sleeping in today. Chair Koznick. Okay. Okay, Representative Scraba first.
Thank you. I'll let you deal with that one. So Mankato State, is that the name of the university?
Minnesota State University.
Minnesota State Mankato. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm going to get gigged again because I do that all the time. I was at Holman Field more than once this last 2 years, and these students keep flying in, and where are you coming from? Mankato. I'm like, and I'm like, doesn't St. Cloud State have a program anymore? And they don't. So this is the next level, so I appreciate you coming to do this. Thank you.
I know you guys had an opportunity to stop out during the bonding tour, and at that time, you know, we had learned that they were using flashlights. to practice at night. And I was like, what? Oh, my gosh. So this tower is really needed and necessary. So I really appreciate you guys taking the time today. I know there's a lot on the docket today. So,
Representative Sexton.
A very quick question. Is there any chance the FAA funds will expire if we don't do that, say, this year? Or is there any time limits on those?
We anticipate the FAA likely will fund their 90% share of this project. It's through a competitive grant, so we have for the last 3 years submitted grants to the FAA and have not yet achieved funding success. We are much further along in the development of our plans, so we continue to be hopeful that this will be the year. When we were awarded into the contract control tower program with the FAA in 2023, we had a deadline of April 19th, 2027 to have the airport control tower up and operational. Last May of 25, the federal government modified that timeline to 2029. So we are still in that window.
All right, Chair Kosnick, and then we'll go to Leon. Chair Leon? No? Okay. Oh yeah. Okay, Vice Chair Frederick next. Okay. Let's speed it up, though.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Schwartz, thank you for this bill. We talked about it. It was a great project to see in terms of the operation of the airport, the size in Mankato of our reliever airport. It is one of the larger ones, and I was very impressed with the operations that they ran. Talked to a couple students. They were female pilots, which was great to see, and traditionally a male-dominated industry, but we need pilots throughout the country. So just wanted to point out the huge leverage amount of the dollars that if we were to fund this, the large amount of over $20 million, it says 25 on my thing, I guess that's the total, but just a great project and a lot of stuff happening down there, a big economic driver. So thank you for bringing this bill forward and supporting it. Thank you to Representative Frederick for also co-authoring. Great job. I hope this is something we can work on.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since already have a lot of people have spoke, I'll be brief. I wouldn't say that this is a project that is a transportation project or an emergency services kind of project. I would say it is a transportation project and an emergency services project and an economic development project and an educational project because of all of the different entities that are using the airport. So it's not just going to be one small lane that would be impacted by this, but an entire region of the state. So I would encourage the committee's support and thank the author for carrying the bill.
All right. Thank you so much for making your way down here. Appreciate your time. Next up, we have Representative Zaleskinar.
I think she's got a couple of bills up. Start off with House File 4311 for the Duluth North Shore Sanitary District, also known as the Poop Chute. You may state your name for the record and continue.
Thank you, Chair Franson, and thank you, Chair Lee. Yes, we need infrastructure money for the poop chute. Yes, we do not want to have, Mary, we do not need to have Lake Superior compromised. And so this is a really important sewer project that goes along the North Shore, Knife River, farther down towards Duluth. And so I will let my testifier, and to honor your time frames, let him explain this project that's a $958,000 project.
Okay, wonderful. You may state your name for the record and proceed.
Kevin Bovee. Good morning, Co-Chair Franson, Co-Chair Lee and members. My name is Kevin Bovee, and I serve as the board chair of the Duluth North Shore Sanitary District. Thank you to Representative Natalie Zaleskinar for carrying House File 4311 on behalf of our sanitary district constituents. I'm here today to request your support for a critical infrastructure investment that is fundamentally about one thing, protecting Lake Superior, Minnesota's greatest natural resource. The idea of protecting Lake Superior was water quality was one of the major fundamental initiatives behind the creation of the district back in 2000. Our system is located along scenic North Shore between Duluth and Knife River, bordered on the north by the Highway 61 Expressway, and on the east by the St. Louis and Lake County line, Much of our sewer infrastructure sits just 1 to 2 blocks uphill from Lake Superior. That means if our system fails, there's nothing stopping contaminated flow of water from flowing directly into the lake. As you know, once pollution reaches Lake Superior, there is no practical way to clean it up. This project is about prevention, stopping a problem before it happens. We are requesting $958,000 to address inflow and infiltration. This occurs when rainwater and snowmelt enter our sewer, sanitary sewer district through cracks and failing pipes. During heavy storms, that extra water overwhelms the system, leading to equipment failures, emergency overflows, and increased long-term costs. This is not a theoretical risk. Along the North Shore, we face acidic soils, frequent freeze-thaw cycles, and intense storm events, all of which accelerate infrastructure deterioration. This project will keep stormwater out of the sanitary system, reduce the risk of emergency failures, extend the life of our infrastructure, and most importantly, protect Lake Superior from wastewater sewage contamination. We serve just 420 customers, but they are already carrying a heavy burden. The average residential sewer bill in our district is about $170 per month, over $2,000 per year, and we believe some of the largest monthly sewer charges in Minnesota. Without state support, this project would cost each customer approximately $2,280 more. At a time when sewer costs already approach 2% of median household income, that simply isn't sustainable to our residents. We hope you can get behind this project. Small systems, limited ratepayer base, and infrastructure that protects the resource of regional and international importance. Lake Superior is not just a Minnesota asset. It is an international asset also bordered by Wisconsin, Michigan, Ontario. Protecting it requires proactive investment in the infrastructure that safeguards it. We are doing our part locally. We are asking the state to be a partner in that effort, and thank you for your time and consideration, and I'd be happy to try and answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Bovee. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. How many miles, total miles of district sewer line is there?
Mr. Bovee.
On the line, I think, is our engineer. I'm guessing it's the district itself is probably over 30 because it goes from the county line all the way out to WLSSD in West Duluth.
Right.
And in the district, it's 20-some-odd miles. So, but it goes from one end to the other.
So
24 miles of district.
Please go through the chair. Representative Scraba.
So the reason I bring this up is the value that this is, it's incredible. Because when we toured this site or had this, for $900-some-thousand, what you're doing is like, I wish you could do all projects like this because this is so reasonable, and for what you're doing, I'm just blown away, and I thank you for coming forward.
Thank you.
Mr. Loy is on Zoom and has something to add. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
John Loy with MSA. I'm the district engineer. I would add that it's 24 miles of sewer line that the 420 customers have to maintain, and then another 8 miles through Duluth.
All right. Any other further questions? All right. Representative Zlesner, closing words.
Thank you, Chair Franson. And as you said, fund the poop chute to protect Lake Superior.
Thank you. It. And thank you, Mr. Bovee, for making your way down here.
Thank you.
And now we've got House File 198 for the Duluth International Airport.
We're going to do a
All right, so we've got a delete all amendment here. If I can find the bill. We're all out of sorts. There we are. All right, so we want to move the DE1 amendment.
Thank you, Chair Franson. I'd like to move the DE amendment.
Okay, we're going to move the DE1 amendment. Members, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Amendment passes. To-year bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Franson and Chair Lee. This bill you've heard pieces of before and when you've probably toured the district, but the Duluth Airport has a 75-year-old tower. This is a $4 million ask to get this project complete. It has federal matching dollars, and I will I'll allocate the rest of my time to the testifier from Duluth. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Co-Chairs Franson and Lee, and members of the Capital Investment Committee, for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Tom Werner, Executive Director of the Duluth Airport Authority. I'd also like to thank Representatives Zeleznikar, Kozalski, and Skraba for their leadership and advocacy on behalf of this important bipartisan project. In addition, I want to recognize Chair Kosnick of the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for his leadership last session, helping us secure a significant portion of our overall request. Thank you all. Mm-hmm. The aviation cluster centered around Duluth International Airport contributes $1.4 billion in annual economic impact and supports 4,000 jobs. DLH is home to Cirrus Aircraft, the Minnesota Air National Guard's 148th Fighter Wing, Vantage Aviation, Lake Superior College's Center for Advanced Aviation, and passenger service providers such as Delta, United, and Minnesota-owned Sun Country Airlines, totaling 88,000 annual operations. This unique mix of fast-moving military jets, research and development flights, slower-moving recreational aircraft, helicopters, and commercial air service creates a complex airspace where air traffic controllers, quarterback movement, and are vital to aviation safety. In addition, Duluth's air traffic controllers assist aircraft who come and go safely from numerous aircraft to airports throughout Northeast Minnesota. This project is important to air safety and air commerce throughout the region. The Duluth International Airport's 70-year-old air traffic control tower has the distinction of being the third oldest air traffic facility in the country. Historically, there has not been a federal program to fund the replacement of locally owned air traffic control towers. This changed when the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act established a competitive grant program to fund the replacement of locally owned air traffic facilities. This $5 billion program provided a five-year window to secure funding that will pay 95% of eligible costs, and a five-year window to do it will help us construct a $69 million air traffic control tower, which includes enabling projects, including building demo, utilities, and a road relocation. We submitted our last federal grant application a few weeks ago, and this is the final year of the program. We are awaiting the results.
All right, thank you. Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I'm going to just go a little bit outside of our committee's jurisdiction. Maybe this is more for Andy Lee. So the DE amendment referenced the state airport funds. I know that that's not within our budget. Are you able to tell us, if not right now, follow up with the committee, how much is remaining in the airport funds, and could projects like the Mankato projects and other airport projects be eligible for funding for this type of work there too?
All right. Mr. Andy Lee.
Madam Chair and Chair Lee, so the State Airports Fund has a unreserved fund balance of about $4.6 million at the end of this fiscal year. Sorry, about $4.7 million at the end of this fiscal year. If the legislature appropriates the entire balance, then it would blink on an increase in the air flight property tax. So if you were to spend slightly less than the $4.7 million, then it wouldn't blink on. The amendment has a $2 million appropriation in fiscal year 2027 and then sets a base for $2 million in the tails. So they would maintain the balance, and there would probably be an amount left over that would be, you know, more than the Mankato project.
Shirley.
Thank you, Chair Franson. And maybe to Mr. Werner, just real quickly, in the handout you have for us, it's requesting $4 million from the state, but the amendment is at $2 million, and so is the request $2 million, or is it $4
million? And
Chair Franson and committee members, the request is for $4 million. Our original request was for $14 million, with the $10 million cash appropriation from the transportation bill last year. The remaining $4 million is what we're requesting right now.
All right, thank you, Mr. Werner. All right, Chair Kosnick, did you? No, okay. Any other further questions? Okay, to the author.
Thank you, Chair Franson and Chair Lee and members. This is the final remaining balance that we need to close this project out to make sure Duluth doesn't have a 70-year-old tower. So I would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for testifying.
Who are we doing now?
Okay, Chair Robbins.
Good morning. I'm going to invite my city folks to come up as well.
Yes, please come on up. All right, you may state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members Kristen Robbins and my testifiers from the City of Independence, and we are here on HF4309, which is a bonding bill that we desperately need in our district. And because the testifier limits, we have our Mayor of Independence with us and our City Administrator, but this actually is the confluence right on the line of the City of Medina and the City of Loretto as well. So they are speaking on behalf of three cities, just to make that clear. So this is an ongoing project in my district. This is the main railroad, and we had a bonding project at a different railroad crossing maybe 5 years ago or 6 years ago, and this is the next one in the line that we need to address. So that's why we're bringing the project, and with that, I'll turn it over to my testifiers.
All right. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Franson and Chair Lee. My name is Brad Spencer. I'm the mayor of the City of Independence. I was here last week on St. Patrick's Day with you all, and I'm glad to be back. Thank you for hearing this important bill. We are here today to express our support for HF 4309, which requests $390,000 to complete the safety improvements at the CP Rail crossing at Town Line Road, just west of Loretto in western Hennepin County. The request builds upon the legislature's previous investment of $450,000 appropriated in 2023, which was part of HF 670, Chapter 71. Since that time, the project has advanced through engineering and design phases. As those efforts have progressed, it has become clear that the construction costs will exceed the original estimate, largely due to the complexity of the crossing and its surrounding conditions. The additional funding requested in HF 4309 will allow the project to move forward and complete the improvements as designed. Town Line Road crossing is uniquely complex. It crosses two active tracks, the main line and a passing siding. It's influenced by a nearby intersection, which also creates additional safety considerations for motorists. These conditions increase the need for modern crossing protection and coordinated traffic controls to reduce risk for drivers, residents, and train operators. The crossing, located half in the City of Independence and half in Medina and just west of Loretto, experiences significant rail traffic, averaging approximately 25 trains per day. With that level of activity, safe and reliable warning systems are essential to prevent conflicts between roadway users and rail operations. The Town Line Road project represents the next step in a series of railroad crossing safety improvements along this rail corridor. Previous projects have already been completed with the help of the House. At Pinto Drive in Medina in 2018, Arrowhead Drive in Medina in 2021, and County Road 19 in Loretto in 2024. These investments have steadily improved the safety along this rail corridor from east to west. The Town Line Road crossing is a continuation of that work and will help close an important remaining safety gap. This crossing lies within both the cities of Independence and Medina. Completing this project will enhance safety, reduce the risk of collisions, improve quality of life for residents of multiple neighboring communities. It will also ensure the state's prior investment can be fully realized and that the improvements already designed can be constructed as intended. So for these reasons, the leaders of the cities of Medina, Loretto, and Independence respectfully ask the committee to support HF 4309 and the additional $390,000 needed to complete the Town Line Road Railroad crossing safety improvements. With me here today is Mark Kaltzis. He's my administrator for the City of Independence. He can share a little bit more on the details of the improvements as proposed.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Mark Kaltzis. I am the City Administrator for the City of Independence, and we appreciate you hearing our request for additional funding. I just wanted to just highlight or emphasize what Mayor Spencer had already said. This is a complicated intersection, and so as we got through design process on this intersection, it became apparent that we had to put into place some mitigation measures due to the configuration of the railroad and its close proximity to existing intersections. The existing intersection does not have the ability to be closed off or to be converted to a right in, right out. And because of that, it required quite a bit more construction than had previously been considered for this intersection. So the complexity of the intersection is really what is driving that additional cost that wasn't anticipated in the original bill that was approved. So we respectfully are requesting some additional funding so that we can just get this project done, which would be the last in this sequence of intersections along this corridor. So on behalf of the City of Independence and our regional partners, we request the additional funding, and thank you for your time.
All right, thank you. Any questions? Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, did you consider a roundabout in this location, or wouldn't it be consistent with engineering?
Who would like to take that question?
I will say I don't think it's feasible at all, given how the train is, but I'll defer to our city administrator. I don't think that would even have been considered.
Thank you.
It would not have been considered. Due to the configuration of that intersection, it wouldn't have been a viable solution.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you for making your way down here. We appreciate you.
Thank you, sir.
Have a great day. Yep. And then Chair Robbins, you have another bill up?
I do, and I'd like to welcome
House File 4032 for the City of Corcoran.
Corcoran.
Mm-hmm. All right, you may state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair and members. Again, Kristen Robbins, District 37A, and I'm here with the Mayor of Corcoran and our Chief of Police. And we are here about a bill to construct a West Metro Regional Public Safety Facility. And I'll let them talk about the details, but we also, I don't know if they got submitted for the record, but we also have letters of support from more than six. I had it on my phone and now it disappeared. But we have letters of support from the cities of Orono, Rogers, Maple Plain, Dayton. I may be forgetting one or two, but there's a lot of the smaller cities in the western Hennepin County and Wright County that support this project. So I just want to bring that to the members' attention. With that, I'll turn it over to Mayor McKee.
Thank you.
All right. Please state your name for the record and welcome to the committee.
Chair Franzen, Co-Chair Lee, and members, good morning. My name is Tom McKee. I serve as the mayor of the city of Corcoran. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 4032, which includes a $10 million bonding request for a West Metro Regional Public Safety Facility. I want to start with one key point. This is not a Corcoran project. This is a regional public safety solution. Mm-hmm. In my role as mayor, I meet regularly with other mayors across the region, particularly in Northwest Hennepin County and into Wright County, and a frequent concern I hear is that small and mid-sized cities and communities simply do not have reliable, affordable access to training and coordinated public safety infrastructure. And this is not a small issue. 70% of police departments in Minnesota have fewer than 20 officers. At the same time, communities like Corcoran and neighboring communities such as Dayton are among the fastest growing, not just in the metro, but in the entire state of Minnesota. That growth is increasing demand on public safety systems that are already stretched. This project directly addresses that gap. From a state perspective, it checks every box for bonding. It's a publicly owned and shared use. It serves multiple jurisdictions. It delivers long-term public safety benefits, and it avoids duplicative investments by creating a centralized regional facility for small to mid-sized cities and police departments. This is also a ready and responsible investment. The city already owns the site with utilities and road infrastructure already in place. Planning is underway, and construction is anticipated in 2027 with completion in 2028. Our total project is approximately $50 million, with the city and our partners funding the majority of the cost. State bonding dollars are what will transform this local civic campus project into the regional public safety asset our communities need. Next, you hear from our Director of Public Safety and Police Chief, who will speak to that and what it looks like on the ground for our officers and our neighboring agencies. Before I hand it over, members, this is a practical go-to regional solution to a real and growing need. On behalf of the City of Corcoran and our regional partners, I respectfully ask for your support of House File 4032, and now I'll hand it over to our chief.
Yes.
Yes,
thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Franzen, Chair Lee, and members of the committee. Thank you for your time this morning. My name is Matt Gottschalk. I'm the Director of Public Safety in Corcoran. As Mayor McKee mentioned, Corcoran and the surrounding areas are some of the fastest growing areas in our state. Yet my community, like many of yours, is still an agrarian community. but we're located in western Hennepin County on the western edge of our metropolitan area. We're made up predominantly of farm fields, yet unfortunately we're left competing with our neighbors for limited public safety resources. There's over 100 law enforcement agencies in the seven county metro area employing over 2,000 police officers. Over 30 of those agencies exist in Hennepin County alone. To give you a snapshot of what the landscape looks like and what we're competing with for training space. Training space for our small communities like mine and extending down the western edges of our metropolitan area are either booked out, highly cost prohibitive for small agencies or non-existent. On Tuesday, my agency conducted one of our annual required use of force trainings, and as I watched my officers rolling around on our garage floor and needing to train in multiple shifts, because it's our only available space, it struck me that there's no wonder we continue to face hiring shortages in law enforcement. Our department is not the only one facing these challenges, and the scene is replicated over and over in our region. This project has received a large number of letters of support from communities in our region, and it emphasizes how dire the need is in our area. And while the state has continued to increase training mandates, our agencies struggle to meet them and still serve our communities at the same high level that we have in the past. As Corcoran is forced to make improvements as a community, we want to support the other communities around us and in our region that are facing those same challenges. With the state investment in this project, it supports dozens of communities, and or at least a dozen of communities in the western metro area, and it's really, like we said, the fastest growing part of our state. Without the state investment, the communities will continue to struggle to meet those demands. So to sum it up, it's a shovel-ready project. It supports public safety training needs and emergency management. In a number of communities, it's gone through multiple public engagement hearings in our region and is critical to maintaining safety standards for law enforcement in our state. We really appreciate your time and consideration today. We ask that you continue to support our Minnesota officers as the complexities and demands of their jobs are increasing day by day in the communities they are caring for. And we ask you to support our $10 million bonding request for critical investment in our state's safety.
Okay, thank you. Members, any questions? Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chief. Just two quick questions. What is the total project cost? And then are the other communities that you're working with, are they going to contribute to the project, or is it more after it's built through the lease agreement that you're going to have with them? Thank you.
Chief Gottschalk.
Thank you. The total project cost is just under $50 million. The other surrounding communities, our ability to make this a regional asset is dependent on the state bonding dollars. So if we are not able to receive the bonding funding, those communities likely would not be participating agencies.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Do you have final thoughts, Chair Robbins?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just briefly, I want to highlight the need for this. So these smaller cities really have trouble getting into other training facilities. Either they can't afford it in their budgets because it's a membership model or because there just is no time available. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And then we have Chair Igel. All right, you have House File 4383, Forest and Forestry. Please state your name for the record and proceed. Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam
Chair. Yeah, did you bring treats?
I didn't bring treats today, I apologize. Well, but this bill is a treat for the state of Minnesota members. So, Madam Chair, members, thanks for having me in committee today. Carrying the bill for reforestation for the state of Minnesota. So, really exciting opportunity. It's going to be $18 million in GO bonds that's going to go to help every single one of our districts in the state of Minnesota to reforest and keep our environment healthy. It's going to support recreation. It's going to support water quality. It's going to support wildfire remediation. It's going to support industry, and it's going to support our communities. So I think it's very rare that I get to come to the bonding committee and say, I'm here to help all of our districts. So I'm looking forward to a good discussion today. I have two great testifiers that are going to give you a good rundown. Thank you again for the opportunity.
You're welcome. You get a tree. You get a tree. We all get a tree.
I'm dressed up as a tree. Mm-hmm. Brown pants, green shirts. We love trees.
All right. Who would like to testify first? Okay. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Okay. Co-Chair Franson, Co-Chair Lee, my name is Tom Radovich. I'm the Executive Vice President for Minnesota Forest Industries. We're an organization that represents the forest products companies in Minnesota. We support 32,000 jobs directly in the state. I'm here today to basically support the House File 4383, which will improve overall forest health, critical to recreation, wildlife, and forest products economies. Over the past decade, the annual DNR forest health reports indicate a concerning trend in the number of forest acres impacted by disease, infestation, and severe weather events. From 2015 to 2025, the total forest acres impacted by these threats steadily increased from 300,000 acres to 1.2 million acres. Mitigation of these forest threats requires site-level forest improvement and tree planting. Yet our annual reforestation investment doesn't align with the need. The DNR needs $8 million per biennium for reforestation activities. Unfortunately, capital investment for reforestation has only met that requirement once in the last 5 years. Compounding this expanding forest health threat is potential decline in the primary tool that we use to mitigate that problem, which is timber harvesting. Every year in Minnesota, about 23% of the total timber harvest comes from state forests. The wood used to make our products must be certified, however, through the Sustainable Forestry Initiative and the Forest Stewardship Council programs. When wood is harvested from state lands, wood certification protocols require reforestation within 5 years. Since the DNR is required by law to reforest harvested acres, without sufficient bonding funds, the DNR must pay a higher percentage to reforest their lands from the Forest Management Incentive Account. However, this account also supports timber sales and forest road maintenance. The shift in fund could result in the DNR offering fewer acres of timber harvest needed for proper forest health and wildfire mitigation. I thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I'm open to questions.
All right. Members, any questions? Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Igo, I appreciate your bringing this bill. I've been here a while, and I remember Tommy Rukavina and I had some interesting bills, and I voted for them. They were underwear made in the USA, of all things, flags made in the USA in Minnesota, are required. But I was at Menards the other day and made me think of this exact issue, and I bought one piece of lumber, and I got it home, and I'm cutting it, making trophies for this thing. I was, for the hockey tournament, I was making them, and I noticed a sticker on there, and it said that piece of lumber was from New Zealand. And I'm like, this is ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. With the great state of Minnesota, we do corn, soybeans, other things, and there's just no reason we can't get our lumber from Minnesota. It's just here somewhere in the United States. So it just rather shocked me. So thank you for bringing us. I don't know if I could get, I just can't believe that they can get a piece of lumber from New Zealand that's cheaper than buying it in northern Minnesota. Anyways, thank you.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Are up, I see.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When the different businesses go in and harvest that lumber, are they required to cover any of the cost share for reforestation at all, or do they have a role in that?
And who would like to take that? Mr. Rudovich?
So, Madam Chair, Representative Frederick, it depends on the type of sale that's put up. Most of the time, it's with the state lands, it's primarily an auction, and once the auction is done, then you've got an operator that goes in and reforests. They do follow sustainable forest management plans that we provide in the state of Minnesota, very comprehensive. In fact, we just put a new plan out here. We hadn't published anything in probably the last 10 years. And so all the loggers go through that certification process, which involves, how much they leave behind in terms of residue. And then, of course, depending on the type of species that it is, some species regenerate naturally. So like an aspen stand will just regenerate by itself. But some stands are more complicated, and as a result, you have to plant different species of trees, whether it be oak or maple or pine, those type of things.
All right. And I don't want to cut anybody off because everybody's words are so very important here. And if you're lucky enough, you might even go viral. But Representative Igo, Chair Igo, you are needed in taxes. So did you have anything else to add to your lovely bill?
Vote in support for trees, members.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right. Chair Davids, don't stop believing.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, you've got the Root River State Trail, House File 3852. You may proceed with your
Thank testimony. You so much, mm-hmm. And I find it interesting how Representative Igo is needed in taxes and I'm not. So I guess that's the way it goes.
Yes, the show must go on.
Yeah, the show must go on, that's right. Okay, so House File 3852, maybe, I don't know how you do it in this committee, could we get the amendment on, or do we need to... The amendment is to put $1 million in for the Forestville Bridge, which you were also kind to come down and visit Forestville State Park, and you saw the bridge, and you'll notice the bridge isn't where it's supposed to be. The bridge is on land. It's supposed to be over the river. And so we need money to do that. In the past, the Historical Society has been very, very supportive of getting this done. And so if you put the amendment on there, we'll get in the shape that the author would like.
All right. Representative or Chair Davids is asking us to move the A1 amendment. Members, any questions on the A1 amendment? Okay, seeing none. All in favor of the A1 amendment?
Aye.
Any opposition? All right, amendment is adopted. So to your bill as amended, Chair Davids.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. And normally I would bring all the folks in from the area to have a ton of testimony to support this. We're in a little different situation here. This is a bill that had been funded in the past, and I had to make a decision. We had two bills that were approved with funding for one, and the one we did approve was from Harmony to the state line, so we're hooked into the state line. Now that project went forward, and the reason I had to make the decision, the reason I made the decision to go to Harmony instead of the town where I live in Preston was because they had options that were running out. And if we didn't act quickly, that money would have been gone, but now you've got a very nice trail down the state line. And as Chair Hansen knows, hopefully we'll get Iowa to connect with us as soon as possible. So that's connects the two states, and that's a pretty exciting situation we're in. So. We come back here for one that had been approved by the, not this committee, but the bonding committee in previous years. The people of Preston were very understanding. It was awesome. But I'd really like to go from Preston to Carimona, and that's what this bill does. And it also, with the amendment, it also puts the bridge back in place at Historic Forestville.
All right. Thank you, Chair Davids. Questions for Chair Davids? Okay, seeing none. That was exciting. Thank you.
It was a page-turner, really was. So I really appreciate the hearing. And hopefully this can be included because two things I'm hoping for. Number one, there's a tax bill. Number two, there's a bonding bill. We can get this done.
Two of my favorite things. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you, members. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, members, now we're going to go in order. We have up House File 3995, Representative Knutson, for the City of Frazee.
This is the one where I missed the amendment and copied, so she's raising the price and letting them know.
All right, I just got to find your bill here. There it is. And then you have an amendment. Representative Knutson, you have an amendment?
Yes, Chair.
Okay, so an A1 amendment. All right. Any questions to the A1 amendment?
Did we get the one copy? I don't think this is the one I didn't get a copy.
You didn't get a copy of it? Okay, so nobody has a copy of it.
She's raising the price and waiting.
Mm-hmm. So do we do an oral then? Yes, Chair Lee.
Madam Chair, I don't think amendment is needed right now as okay. We move forward. That we have all the correct language. We know that bonding bills are kind of hard to pass, and so we'll make sure we got the language for anything.
Okay, we'll work with that then. Okay, to your bill, Representative Knutson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Lee. House File 3995 is a bonding request for the City of Frazee for a road project. This road is important for water and sewer infrastructure that are integral to the corridor's function. And actually public safety. There are some issues with this road in that it is adjacent to mostly public land. So accessibility is very hard for the city.
The A1 amendment would have increased the cost as the cost of the project has gone up to $2.45 million. And then also there is not that local match.
Right. So you're waiving the local match. Okay.
Waiving the local match.
And what is the reason for waiving the local match?
To me? Mm-hmm. Again, just because of the road is surrounded by public land. There's a very small portion of private land, but that makes assessing it for this project difficult. So
okay.
And testifier?
Yes. Please state your name for the record and you may proceed.
Good morning, Chair Franson, Chair Lee, and committee members. My name is Stephanie Pagel. I serve as the city administrator for the city of Frazee. I'm here today to respectfully request your support for House File 3995 for $2.45 million in funding for the North River Drive Infrastructure Improvements Project. This project will install approximately 1 mile of water and sewer line, asphalt road, and multi-use trail. There is only one property along the road that is eligible for special assessing. The remaining property is either outside city limits or publicly owned by the city or Frazee School District. The timing of this request is critical. Plans are underway to install 2 restrooms and 1 shower house at Arwanigan Regional Park this summer. Without this project, we will need to drill 2 wells and install 2 septic systems near the Ottertail River. While this installation is funded through a grant from the GMRPTC, these systems will become obsolete once water and sewer lines are extended, resulting in unnecessary duplication of costs. In addition, the existing gravel road was never designed to handle the level of traffic we are seeing today. In 2025 alone, the park recorded over 37,000 visitors. This road also borders the Frazee School District campus, including football, softball, and baseball fields, as well as a playground. Student safety is a major concern, particularly for those biking or walking to these facilities. The proposed multi-use trail will provide a safe, dedicated route. The project also supports economic development by creating a direct connection between the park campground and our downtown, benefiting our community of just over 1,300 residents. Finally, the waterline extension will create a looped system for the Red Willow Heights neighborhood. Currently, this area is served by a single waterline, meaning a failure would leave residents without access to safe, reliable drinking water. Passage of House File 3995 will ensure safe drinking water, improved infrastructure, and safer access for students and residents alike. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
All right, any questions? Okay, seeing none, thank you do you have any final closing thoughts, Representative Knudsen?
Nope, thank you, Chair.
Okay,
thank you, Chair.
Wonderful, thank you so much for coming down and testifying today from the great city of Frazee. All right, Representative Rapinski, you're on deck. House File 4091 for Winona County, Pickwick Mill Dam Repair. Wow, that is a tongue tie.
I vote yes.
Thank you, Chair. I was once told from Representative Allen that it's customary for a freshman legislator to bring a treat in their first presentation to a committee. So my treats I brought today are actually very symbolic. I brought a Rice Krispie bar because it really shows the, much like a dam, how structural integrity is imperative. And without that, if that was to be compromised, you could have a gusher. So I would ask everybody would enjoy one of each so you can truly appreciate the importance of this ask.
All right. And so we are hearing this bill. It is a cash bill. As of now, we don't have any cash in our committee, but we're just hearing this as a courtesy right now until we know how things shake out.
Thank you, Chair France. I'm proud to author this bill for the dam repair. The historic Pickwick Mill in Winona County dates back to the mid-1800s and is a living piece of Minnesota history and is also listed on the Minnesota Historic Registry. The remarkable flour mill shows us exactly how our pioneers accomplished so much without electricity or gas engines, relying solely on the use of water. Adults and kids alike learn from this project, and it is frequently host to a variety of groups to learn about our state's history. Repairing this dam is urgent as it begins to leak. If the dam fails, it will drain a lake, endanger waterways, and threaten community roads. House File 4091 provides the funding to repair the dam structure and keep the mill running for future generations to learn and enjoy. And I have testifiers here to answer any questions if needed.
All right. Testifiers, do you have anything to add to the presentation? Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Mm-hmm. Chair Lee, committee, thank you for having me here today. Pickwick Mill.
And your name, sir, for the record?
Oh, my name is Tony Blumentritt, and I am project manager for Pickwick Mill.
Got it. Proceed.
The mill is open to the public from May, late May to October. The mill also hosts tour groups from riverboat cruise ships, local school groups, and from various other groups. It's run by the Pickwick Mill, Inc., which is a nonprofit organization which was created in 1982 for the restoration of the mill, restoration and maintenance of the mill. Pickwick Mill Dam, which Aaron was speaking of, is integral to the operation of the mill and has been part of the mill complex since its original construction in 1850s. The mill was constructed on its site to take advantage of the waterfall on Big Trout Creek. The mill dam gates were built to create a reservoir to allow for proper water depth to power the mill's water wheel. The water wheel is really what we're after here because the mill has six floors of machinery, which is all run off of the wheel, and the mill provides water for the wheel. If we don't repair the wheel, we have no power to run the machinery or to run the mill. It loses a lot of its flavor. The dam currently manages water flow also through the Pickwick community during flood events. Without the dam, the water would flow unchecked. The lake, the impoundment behind the dam, that's a recreational area for the people that live in the Pickwick area. Without the dam, there is no lake. The dam is also a reservoir for the local fire department to put water in their trucks. Without the dam, there is no water available for the trucks. It's a very important thing. In 2019, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources sent a letter to Pickwick Mill noting items requiring attention at the mill, and we've been working on that project since. Plans are prepared, plan specifications are done, and they're approved by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, by the Minnesota DNR, Department of Dam Safety, and the State Historic Preservation Office. We're done. We have $84,126 invested in the project so far, and we're here to seek support for HF4091 for project construction. Once procured, our next step is to solicit contractor bids.
Thank you. All right. Members, any questions? No? All right. Final thoughts, Representative Rupinski.
Thank you very much, Chair Franson, and thank you, fellow colleagues, for hearing our bill today.
Thank you for making your way down to the Capitol.
And if we'd like to assume that these are for Representative Eichel's birthday, you can do that, too.
Okay. Thank you. Next up, we have... Representative Anderson. All right. Haynesville. House File 4084. You may state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chairs Franzen and Lee. Representative Anderson, I'm here on behalf of the city of Painesville, which is in central Minnesota. They have a water treatment situation in their city. And to address the demands of a new industrial park and also the demands of associated milk processors to increase their milk processing capacity, a new pretreatment facility is needed in the city of Painesville. Minnesota dairy currently is facing a pretty critical situation. Simply put, we have a shortage of milk processing in our state, and if we don't address this need, milk produced here by Minnesota farmers may have to be sent elsewhere to be processed. Now, AMPI has plans to increase processing in Painesville from 3 million to 4 million pounds a day. However, this is beyond the capacity of their wastewater, current wastewater system. A couple of testifiers, Madam Chair, to further address the situation in Painesville.
All right, you may state your name for the record and proceed.
Oh, okay, thank you. Tarek El-Rafai, I'm the city administrator in Painesville. Chair Franzen, Chair Lee, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. I'll try to be very brief so I can give my colleague here a chance to speak as well. I'm here today about an important infrastructure project for the city of Painesville and for the broader rural economy in central Minnesota. The city of Painesville is requesting state support to construct a new wastewater pretreatment facility, a system that removes pollutants from the industrial water before it enters our municipal treatment plant. The project is necessary to meet the state environmental standards, protecting our existing jobs, and ensuring we have the capacity needed for future economic growth in our community. The total cost of the project is $14.16 million. The City of Painesville and AMPI have already committed $5 million in local funding, and we are requesting $9.16 million in state support to complete the project. The facility will be owned and operated by the City of Painesville and will ensure compliance with discharge standards established by the MPCA. This project helps to address a very real need facing Minnesota agriculture today, and also limited processing capacity. When the capacity is constrained, farmers face higher costs and fewer opportunities to grow. This project is not only about supporting one employer, it's also about preparing our community for the future. Wastewater capacity is one of the most critical pieces of infrastructure for economic development. Without adequate capacity, the community cannot attract new businesses, expand industrial parks, or support job creation. This project removes that constraint and positions Painesville for long-term growth. In short, the investment serves two clear purposes. First, it supports the continued growth of AMPI and the family farms that depend on it. Second, it creates the infrastructure necessary for the city of Painesville to attract new business, expand our tax base, and support future job creation. With that, I thank you for your time and consideration, and I respectfully ask for your support.
All right. You may state your name for the record and proceed.
Okay. Madam Chair Franzen and Chair Lee, committee members, I'd like to thank Representative Anderson, first of all, for carrying this bill for our dairy community, our dairy farmers. I'm Steve Schlung. I'm a dairy farmer from Albany, Minnesota, and treasurer of the Board of Directors for Associated Milk Producers Incorporated. We're an upper a dairy cooperative owned by family farms in the upper Midwest. Along with my wife, Cheryl, we operate a 65-cow dairy with a robotic milker. We are one of about 100 farm families who market milk through AMPI's Painesville, Minnesota Barrel Cheese and Whey Plant. On behalf of those families, I urge you to support the proposed amendment, proposed investment in a city-owned wastewater treatment facility in Painesville. As described by the Painesville Administrator, Tarek Al-Rafai, AMPI would also participate in this investment. With the construction of this pretreatment facility, AMPI's Painesville plant could utilize about an additional 1 million pounds of processing capacity per day, going from 2.9 million to 3.8 million pounds of milk processed daily. This investment unlocks immediate, usable processing capacity in the state of Minnesota, benefiting all dairy farmers. Minnesota is increasingly constrained by limited milk processing capacity. When capacity is tight, it creates challenges. The impact on this project is straightforward. It expands Minnesota's milk processing capacity. It supports dairy farm viability and growth. It strengthens key rural employer, and it keeps more value-added dairy production within our state. On behalf of our farmers, I'd like to thank you for your consideration, and I would take any questions you might have.
Thank you. Members, any questions? No? Oh, Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you know, I think last year and previous years we expressed concern about when we started, if we were starting to pay infrastructure for private companies, and we were told, oh, it's just this one. Just one. Here we go. It's more than just one.
deep thoughts today. Any comments?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, this would be owned by the city of Painesville, and it would help the agribusiness in the entire area of central Minnesota. So, again, the dairy industry needs the support. We are at capacity in this state. Dairy is a huge part of our state's ag economy, and I fully support the bill.
Okay, good to know. All right, any other further member comments? Seeing none, thank you for making your way down to the city today, to the St. Paul, to advocate for your community. Appreciate that.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. All right, next up, we have Chair Bennett. Easton New Water Tower. And you have a testifier via Zoom today.
I do, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay, state your name for the record and proceed.
I'm Representative Peggy Bennett, 23A, and I'm here to present to you the request for Easton for a new water tower. And Madam Chair Franson and Chair Lee, thank you, and committee for hearing this bill. I would like to add that the city of Easton has a population of 177. This water tower that they currently have was built in 1911 and is lead-lined. And just to give you some context, in 1911, horses and wagons were the mode of transportation in Easton. So I will just hand this over to my testifier, Madam Chair, to keep things moving.
All right. You may state your name for the record and proceed.
John Rath. Thank you, Representative Bennett, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. Again, my name is John Rath, and I serve on the City Council for Easton, a rural community, as Representative Bennett said, 177 residents in Faribault County. Easton began its comprehensive water infrastructure improvement project in the spring of 2019. We began our discussions in 2016, so we've been doing this for 10 years. As part of a regional partnership, we receive our retreated water from the City of Wells, and over the past several years, we have completed every component of our planned upgrades, water, sewer, and storm infrastructure replacement, as well as installing new water meters for all of our residents. The one remaining piece is the replacement of our water tower. As Representative Bennett said, it was constructed in 1911 and contains confirmed lead-based coatings. It has exceeded its useful life by many decades, and replacing it is essential to ensuring safe, reliable water service for our community. We had a clear path moving forward to complete this final phase. The City of Easton was relying on WIF through PFA to make this project financially feasible for our residents. However, due to a recent increase in our median household income, we no longer qualify for WIF assistance and had been anticipating incorporating it into our project planning. For a community of our size, this sudden loss of eligibility creates an insurmountable financial barrier. We have done everything asked of us: regionalized treatment, modernized our systems, invested locally, and followed the process step by step. We're just simply asking to finish what we started. The City of Easton respectfully requests inclusion of $1.5 million in Minnesota's 2027 capital budget to replace this elevated water tower and ensure safe, reliable water service for our residents. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I'll answer any questions if possible.
All right, thank you. Members, questions? Okay, seeing none, Representative Bennett, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll let you keep moving.
Thank you so much. Thank you for making your way to the Zoom to testify.
Thank you.
Next up, we have, Representative Burkle. Middle River Well and Well Pump House. 3673. And you have a testifier on Zoom as well. All right. You may state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thanks for the opportunity to present House File 3673 for the City of Middle River up north. This proposal addresses a clear gap in what we've all seen funding critical infrastructure, water projects in small rural communities like Middle River. With a population of 289 residents and a really very limited tax base, the city does not have the capacity to absorb the cost of a nearly $1 million water infrastructure project without placing a really significant burden on its residents. So in the interest of time, and I know Representative Scraba has a few bills coming up, I'll move along to my testifier, if that's okay, Madam Chair.
Yes, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Franzen and Lee. I appreciate it. My name is Matthew Strumsett, Mayor of Middle River here. And just want to thank you guys for hearing our bill today. Again, as Representative Burkle had brought up, we have such a small tax base, and with only 136 households here in the community of Middle River, it would put a tax burden of roughly $7,200 per household onto the residents. And so what we're here for is we're here requesting your support for the $988,000 that we're looking to put into the pump house and water treatment facility here in Middle River. We just in the past year have added four different services, which is really big for such a small town. And with the and we hope to continue growing the town itself. And with that, we'd like to have the water treatment facility to be able to handle it as well. So thank you all for your time and consideration, and I'm able to field any questions.
Thank you to our testifier. Do we have any member questions?
No.
Okay, closing comments. Representative Burkle.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. We switched chairs. I was looking away. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to appreciate the time to present the bill. It recognizes, I think, the infrastructure issues all our small communities up north and across this whole state are facing, and kind of provides a targeted solution through the bonding committee. So thanks for your time today, and appreciate your support.
Okay, thank you for making your way down, and thank you to our testifier. Next up, we have Representative Scraba.
4265.
Please make your way to the front. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scraba from District 3A. The first case that I have this morning is a statewide ask for funding to go to the Department of Natural Resources for projects that I will let my testifier help talk about. Thank you.
All right. Please state your name for the record and present your testimony.
Yeah. Thank you, Co-Chair Franzen and Co-Chair Lee and members of the committee. My name is Brad Harrington. I am the Parks and Recreation Operations Manager for Wright County. I'm also the Secretary for Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails. Thank you for allowing me to testify in support of House File 4265, which would appropriate bonding funds to the Outdoor Recreation Grant Program and the Trail Connections Program. Outdoor recreation is so important to Minnesotans, no matter the age or where they live. These grant programs are essential to developing and maintaining our outdoor recreational spaces throughout the state. There are many projects throughout the state that do not meet the regional qualifications for legacy funds, and these grants are one of the few places that those communities can look to for additional funding. A bulk of the increased participation within the usage of parks and recreation facilities has come from what is considered your gateway activities, such as walking, hiking, fishing, camping, bicycling, running. These are all things that people are looking for near their homes. So these amenities and activities are major factors for people. And in return, making these spaces more important to the communities to create and maintain them well. So the DNR does a good job in vetting these projects, and since there's a 50% match for the Outdoor Rec Program, the communities applying for these funds are going to be vested as well. There's also a local match for the Trail Program. So there are, so just kind of professionally with Wright County Parks and Recreation, we are awarded an outdoor recreation grant in the 2025 grant cycle. That's affording us to install accessible playground with poured-in-place surfacing, install a covered shelter, and improve parking and restore native vegetation within Montecipi County Park that's in Monticello. Without these funds, the project would have been very limited in the scope. And these funds allowed us to include all these accessibility features. So then personally, I live in the city of Buffalo, who was also recently awarded funds for a splash pad. And that splash pad, again, was, it's backed with matching funds from the city and a nonprofit organization that vested into this, so you're seeing the community input. There are many stories like this across the state, and the need for continues to grow, as I stated earlier. So with the increased usage to aging infrastructures, these programs are vital to these communities and to all of our communities. Knowing financial times are tight, we are grateful to Representative Scraba for introducing this bill that would appropriate $2 million to each of the Outdoor Recreation Grant Program and the Local Trail Connection Program. And we encourage everyone to support this request in your bonding bill. So thank you.
Thank you. Members, do we have any questions? Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Scraba. As I look through the statute that you're citing here, 85019 Subdivision 2, it has a matching requirement of 50%, but if you're in the metro area, you will have to match $2 for every $3. And so if this is to move forward, are you willing to work on that language to make sure that there's parity whether you're in the metro or not?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Representative Scraba?
Thank you, Chair. I'm sorry.
You're not new here.
I was not aware of that. That again, I'm very open to changing that. And I do want to comment that the governor has $1 million in his bill for this, and we're asking for more because it does go to the metro, it does go to greater Minnesota, it goes everywhere. So it really does make a difference, and it's that gap funding that LCCMR doesn't do, that that Legacy doesn't do. It's that, yeah, where are we going to get the money? Mm-hmm. And then the community also matches. So,
and who better than a ranger than to advocate for more?
Always, always.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's always interesting when we have multiple pots of money. So back during the trifecta, we provided additional money for local grants out of lottery and lieu. And that requires the legislature to appropriate it. And it was, nothing was appropriated last year. And that's directly for this pot of money. And it was a big fight because, as with many fights, we're told that the metro gets everything and that the local trails don't get anything. So there was money that was set aside in a particular fund for this, and there was no effort to spend it.
All right.
Interesting.
Anything, Dad? No? All right, any other questions, comments, members? Okay, seeing none, thank you for this bill, Representative Scraba. And next up, we will move to House File 4012 for the City of Silver Bay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have representatives from Silver Bay and the engineering firm. I will let them tell their story about the need for this and very unique request for a community on the North Shore.
All right, please state your name for the record and you may proceed.
Thank you, my name is Lana Freilich. I am the city administrator for Silver Bay. Thank you, Chair Franson, Chair Lee, members of the committee, and Representative Scraba for hearing this bill. Silver Bay is unique. We're on the shore of Lake Superior. Our elevation causes us some issues with our water system. We are seeking funding to replace our pressure-reducing valves, which is part of our system. And if you look into some comparisons, if you look at the size of Duluth, they have 30 valves. We are a community of about 2 miles long that has 14 of them. And they are one of the things that about our community, we were built in the 50s by Reserve Mining Company. So all of our infrastructure was done at one time, and it is failing all at the same time. So we are having a struggle with phasing our infrastructure. Pressure-reducing valves are extremely important to maintaining our pressures for residents and businesses so that their safety, they're not having issues or damage to their homes. We also, all of them are within confined spaces that make it very difficult. So between the pressures that we have in our system, along with the age of their system, it's causing us some severe safety issues for when we go to repair these. I am going to turn this over to our engineer who can explain a little bit more of the severity of the pressure reducing valves and how they impact that. The other part of this is this does impact the state veterans home in Silver Bay as they are right on the main water high measure, pressure water line. So with that, I will turn that over to Andy Botzler with Bolton and Mink, who's our engineering firm.
Okay, you may state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Franson, Co-Chair Lee, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Andy Brotzler with Bolton and Mink. I am here on behalf of the City of Silver Bay. As City Administrator Follick noted, the City of Silver Bay is a bit unique in that from the top of the city's water system down to the lakeside, at the bottom of the city's water system, there's over 700 feet of elevation change. The city's 14 pressure-reducing valves serve a critical function in the city's water distribution and supply system to regulate pressures at normal operating pressures, somewhere between 60 and 80 psi as a maximum pressure. In the absence of the reliable operation of any one of these pressure-reducing valves in the city's water system, pressures can reach over 240 psi. We're over four times the normal operating pressure within the city's water system. Built in the 1950s, each of these 14 pressure reducing valves are at a similar or at the same age and have exceeded their useful life at the same rate. This was exemplified in January of 25 when the city did have a failure in their pressure in one of their pressure reducing valves that resulted in several water main breaks throughout the city's water supply system, multi-day outages for customers, residents, and property owners, and a boil order to reinstitute the water supply system for a segment of the city's water supply system. As noted previously, given the fragile condition of these pressure-reducing valves, the routine operation and maintenance of these valves is no longer safe and feasible for water operators. The city's ability to continue to maintain a safe and reliable potable water distribution system is at risk until these critical infrastructure components are replaced. Thank you for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you. Members, testify? Or any questions? No? Okay. To the bill author.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, this is a very minor ask, it seems. It's not very big compared to what we normally see, but it's a big deal for this community. We put money in a couple years ago to help their water and sewer lines, and we're hoping that we can get this one across the finish line. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, and thank you for making your way down to the Capitol today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, next up, Representative Scaraba, House File 4339 for Gitche-Gami State Trail. You may proceed.
Just a quick hand. How many people have biked on the Gitche-Gami Trail? I got some in the audience, too. Yes. It's a iconic trail. I was part of the very beginning of the Mesabi Trail, and I helped shepherd that all the way from the beginning towards the end here. The last section will be done now. I was blessed enough to be elected, and the Gitche-Gami Trail is part of the district I represent. So I'm looking forward to helping this trail get funding to get it go, because when folks come from down here up there, it is something to do while you're vacationing. It's a beautiful scenic trail. It's phenomenal, and I hope to keep it going as much as we can. I will, if you look at your handout, you can see the breakdowns of the different parts. So if anyone has any questions on that, feel free, but I'll let my testifiers speak to the trail and everything about it. Thank you.
Okay, sounds great. You may state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Co-Chair Representatives Franson and Lee and members of the Capital Investment Committee. My name is Bruce Martinson, a volunteer with the Gitche-Gami Trail Association since its inception in 1996. And currently serving as the board chair. Our organization works in partnership with the DNR, MnDOT, Minnesota Parks and Trails Council, Lake Cook Counties, and the Arrowhead Regional Development Commission with the goal of completing the 86-mile continuous paved route from Two Harbors to Grand Marais. Our vision is to connect these communities with other North Shore towns, including Silver Bay, Beaver Bay, Tofty, and Lutzen, along with the state parks of Gooseberry, Split Rock, Temperance River, Cascade Park, and numerous wayside rest stops. Along with connectivity, safety is important. Many stretches of Highway 61 have only a narrow 2-foot shoulder, which bikers, walkers, and wheelchair users must traverse. A little over 36 miles of the Gitche-Gamie Trail are complete. Our organization has long advocated for trail construction to stagger back and forth between both Lake and Cook counties.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair Franson and Co-Chair Lee and all the members of the Capital Investment Committee. My name is Michelle Pearson, and I work as a planning assistant at the Arrowhead Regional Development Commission. And as part of my work there, the Gitche-Gamie Trail Association, a nonprofit group, has hired some of my staff time, and I'm here today serving as their executive director. So as you have heard from Bruce and Representative Scraba, we've been at this project for a long time. And it's state support that's helping make this state trail possible. And I just wanted to bring to everybody's attention that even though we have 36 of 86 miles completed to date, we're garnering national attention. USA Today has recognized the trail as one of the top 20 recreational trails in the whole United States. And there's a voting competition right now for anyone who wants to vote for the Gitche-Gamie as the best trail in the US. I'd like to spend a little time calling your attention to the three projects as outlined in this House Bill 4339. The first project is in Lutzen, and it ties to past appropriations and past grant funds. This project will begin at the Arrowhead Electric parking lot and navigate into the Lutzen Town Center, which is only about a third of a mile, but does require a significant bridge over a creek to get into the town. The Minnesota DNR did apply and was awarded a $600,000 Federal Transportation Alternatives Grant for this segment, and we're seeking bonding funds to support the remainder of that construction project. The second project is in the Two Harbors area. We do have support from Two Harbors City Council and from the Silver Bay Township as well as Lake County. And this project would begin at Superior Shores Road and continue to Flood Bay State Wayside. This small segment of trail is a third of a mile, but contains a over 1,000 foot long bridge, which would be helical piles, and then boardwalk bridge that would be paved. It would offer a very unique experience across all of the DNR state trail system. The development of this trail with this significantly long bridge would protect this coastal wetland as well. Two Harbors is the biggest community on the trail corridor, and right now they had their first 1 mile of trail open last spring. So we're really seeking to expand the trail and extend it to a destination. So we're hoping you'll support this project as well. The third project you'll see is in Silver Creek Township, which would help us continue momentum on trail projects by awarding funds for preliminary design and engineering between Flood Bay State Wayside and the Stewart River State Wayside. And within that 1 mile corridor, I'd also like to acknowledge that MnDOT did accommodate the Gitche-Gamie State Trail on a bridge over the Stewart River in a construction project 2 years ago. At this time, Bruce and I would welcome any questions you may have, and we're thankful for past support and appropriations for this great state amenity on our Great Lake. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, fun fact, this summer I'm hoping to do a bike run on the Gitche-Gamie.
Oh, yay.
So, that should be fun, considering I just went on my first bike ride of the year on Friday. And in case you're wondering, the person that was biking ahead of me was going really fast and went over the ice, so I thought I could go really fast, but my really fast wasn't that fast, and I will not recreate the screen because I'm sure that definitely would go viral, but it certainly was not pretty nor attractive, and neither is my body where it's all bruised up now. But I'm just thankful that I'm alive. So here we are. Thank you, Jesus. All right. Is that anything else you want to add to your bill? Or wait, member questions? No? Okay. Anything you'd like to add to your bill?
I want to make sure that if we don't do the whole thing, that at least $700,000, the match to the federal grant, and that bridge is really important on that little section that they need. The pre-design, the flood bay project, that's a big project, and it's going to take some a lot of engineering, and it's a great project, but maybe right now it's not ready, but at least these other two are ready to go. And I do want to comment, all the things we've been hearing for the last couple days or weeks, I'm a firm believer that bonding helps our whole state. Somehow we need to get into that pattern that I spoke about at one meeting, where it's $300 million a year for PFA, $1 billion a year for PFA and these types of projects, and the next year back to $300 million, and just get in that cycle so that when we have these water, wastewater issues, that it's not like, oh, I don't know if we can do it. And we as a state should just grab hold of this and do it and just get into a pattern so that we can make our state a better state than everyone around us. But thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, with that, thank you, Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And before we adjourn, just want to say thank you to all members for their work leading up to first deadline. Really appreciate that. As a heads up, a little preview, we may be having some critters come in on the Tuesday the 7th when we return. And so if you have any little ones, feel free to bring them. I told my young one, and today he was crying because he thought that it was today and he wanted to be here.
And I like him, too. Thank
you. And so I just wanted to say that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, great. So Tuesday will be fun. Are you bringing treats by any chance? Okay, well, I'll hold you to that then. I heard yes. That's what I heard, yes. All right, so our next meeting, members, will be April 7th, okay? So we will not see each other for a while. I know some of you might be sad, some of you might be very happy, but we will be alive and well working in our districts. And on April 7th, Chair Lee will have the gavel. And with that, we are adjourned.